Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Telford, joined by Ben Roy Turner. Keith David and Josh Brown.
I wish you were Keith David, mate. I really do. Every single day of my life.
Is there any project on earth that Keith David has not improved? Even Chronicles made better with that man. But yeah, we thought we'd do a final chapter in the ongoing Mass Effect Legendary Edition saga, which is to say that we've already done episodes on Mass Effect 1, Mass Effect 2, reapproaching them in the modern day. How well do they hold up? How well do they feel? How do those games feel when their DLC is just automatically included? And do they sort of land better over time? One of the biggest question marks was always over Mass Effect 3, because that game's reputation for the longest time was just complete dirt. And I think that it's taken this long for even the Mass Effect fandom itself to sort of reapproach it and go back to it with everything included and go, okay, were things overblown? Was it a thing at the time? You know, does that story actually work if all that stuff is actually included, the stuff that EA initially stripped out, and how does it all feel? So I'm actually going to go to Ben Roy, because your time through Mass Effect, this was your first time through the trilogy.
Yes.
What's your thoughts? Because we haven't actually talked about this. How do you feel about the trilogy of Mass Effect right now?
It's an excellent thing, and it's probably one of the best trilogies in gaming, to be fair. But like, specifically with 3, mm-hmm. like it felt, I got the real sense of dread and like the end of the galaxy and stuff. Like, something I don't think I'd get from this game. Whereas like, say, 1 is just like an interesting dive into this world. 2 is like, I'm focused on the characters and trying to make everyone happy and just want everyone to sort of love me in a way. And then 3 was like, I really did feel like I was going to sort of like points in the galaxy and trying to like, even though I would meet people, bring them back into the fold and essentially crucify them to just a JPEG and a number. But like that, I think they could have done some better stuff with like at the end having everyone there in at least one battle, or at least having like just visualizing how David Keith was defending the Earth for so long. But mm-hmm. like, for, I got such a sense of like, I need to do this. We need to do this. And I thought maybe I would have had problems with it if I was only locked into the 2 endings, I believe, back in the day. But fine.
Well, it was always like the multicolored ending, but also like you had the whole conversation at the time of like EA had separated the likes, like Javik was a DLC character.
That is horrendous, by the way. Yeah. Javik, bringing Javik, so I'm just jumping over you there.
No,
so
no, do it.
Bringing Javik into certain missions, like when you go to the, I can't remember Liara's race, but like when you go to Liara's homeworld, the Asari homeworld, and Javik has so much more conversation in that. And you can tell Javik was literally just hatcheted out of the game at the last minute. And it's not like the 2 DLC characters in 2 where that you can't have a conversation with them ever. Mm. And they're just like, all right, Shepard, I'm a piece of crap. And then you're like, yeah, I know you are.
Them with Zaid and Kasumi, like you get them on the ship and it's, you hit X to talk to them or whatever, and that's it. It doesn't, you don't even get any proper dialogue stuff. But it always felt like Javik was the main component and he should have always been part of the story. Because what was that general feel of all the DLC being plugged in? Like, I mean, I'm bringing Josh in as well, because obviously you played the original Mass Effect 3. But playing Mass Effect 2 Legendary Edition, you could tell where they just made access to the DLC earlier, where it was just sort of, it interfered with the way that Liara's conversations went. Like you were getting hints about the Shadow Broker and what Liara was hunting for before you'd even met her, because the Lair of the Shadow Broker DLC was suddenly available before you were, you would hit that point, because that DLC was released after Mass Effect 2. But yeah, I guess for either of you, like, did it feel more streamlined? Because I've seen Mark Wahlers getting out there saying that he hopes that this goes down better, that the entirety of Mass Effect 3 is the ending. It's not just about the very end. And if you take all of it as one thing, all the DLC that they initially had, it just works in a way that it just couldn't back in 2012.
Yeah, it just feels so much more complete with everything added on top. You know, I played Mass Effect 3 back in the day without Javik, without any of the other DLC, and I didn't dislike it as much as other people. I think the Metacritic score it has is absolutely insane. I think it's got like 93 or 4, which is just crazy, crazy high. I don't think it's that good, but I did think it was good. But yeah, it's even better with everything else rolled into it. I couldn't believe how lengthy most of the DLCs are. Like the Citadel one in particular is so long. Omega is quite long as well. Mm. Leviathan obviously adds so much more to the lore and the background of the Reapers themselves. And yeah, I think the way it's implemented in the game is so much more natural because, you know, if you're going off to investigate the Leviathan, if you're doing the Omega stuff, if you're messing around on the Citadel, for the most part, you're not necessarily locked into it. So you can do drips and drabs of Leviathan as you go, so it doesn't feel like you're taking priority away from other missions. It just feels like you have a better idea of what's going on in the galaxy, the secrets of the galaxy, and obviously it brings your team in a little bit more. I just think I'm really impressed with the DLC for this game.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Citadel stuff, like, how did that strike you, Benro? Because the way they, when everything rolled out initially back in the day, the Citadel stuff was like their apology DLC. Like, obviously, they did the extended cut, which is now the mandated, the actual cut. Like, you don't even, they've just deleted the sort of weirdly half-baked original version or the half-finished original version. But also, the Citadel stuff is just pure banter. It's just an excuse to sort of hang with those characters, write some one-liners, write some memorable. What would become gift as hell now? It would become memed as hell. It would become social media fodder. How did that stuff feel? Because initially that was meant to be the, oh God, we're sorry, here's everything that we forgot to smooth
people
over.
At first they're just like, here's Keith David, also known as Commander and Admiral Anderson. Here's his apartment. I just go in there and listen to him monologue at you for ages. I mean, and just stand there and just listen to his subtle tones. And then just bring people over and have a time and then have a party and people and meet them in the streets and just have a laugh. And then those missions where they're like, remember when we used to just stand in elevators and talk? That was fun, wasn't it? Says Rex. And Garrus goes, no. and just think of that. And spoilers for anyone who's not played it, but like using the toothbrush mentioned in the game to open up the ship and then break into the Normandy thanks to this Mass Effect toothbrush. And you're just like, God's sake, these callbacks to this game and to other things, just like, what's going on? It's excellent. And
You can now do that before the final mission, which kind of changes the whole dynamic of that. Like everything that's in there.
I did it after I finished the game because I thought I knew there would be a party. I was told there's a party. So I was like, I want the party with everyone at the end just to be like, this is the way to say goodbye. But it does so much more justice for a load of characters that, as I said, get turned into JPEGs and then they go into that battle menu and that's them done forever. Mm-hmm. It'd be a bit sad that you can't bring like certain people there because certain characters, go the way of the mists in the game. I don't know how spoilery we're going to go with this, but
we'll skirt around stuff just because I guess people are still playing through it now.
And big old Glyph gets a nice little bow tie, and it's like, you know, I can't say no to that. change for a party appropriate attire and just gets a bow tie. I'm like, yes, that's appropriate.
Josh, do you think the Citadel stuff works better today than it ever did? As like I said, the sort of apology tour they were doing back in 2012.
Well, I think it's always been this beloved thing. You know, I never played it back in the day. I never played any of the DLC. But I do think it slots in a bit more neatly. You know, I've done it just before I'm about to embark on the final missions, and it feels like a nice send-off of getting all of these characters back together. And they kind of acknowledge it that, like, this might be the last party we ever have, depending on how this goes. I kind of love that element. I just think it works. Yeah, it works as a lot of fan service. Yeah, it works as, like, a celebration and potentially an apology, like you said. But it also just works to kind of deepen the characters, their relationships, the interactions, and make them feel a bit more human. Like, to see Shepard in this light, like, outside of the Spectre soldier that my version of her is or has been for like three games now, and like seeing the characters talk about her, there's a great line I think that Anderson has in one of his monologues where he's talking about Shepard, and he's on about, you know, Shepard putting the entire weight of the universe on her shoulders, and she's, you know, not really kind of coming to terms with it. She's putting a body on the line and she's not considering the toll it's taken on her. And then Anderson says something like, you know, I just wish she kind of like realized how much all of us are rooting for her to get back home in one piece. And I was like, that's so cool. Mm-hmm. The fact that you're like exploring this side of those friendships, because it feels very one-sided in the other games, you know, because you're like the player character and you're imposing your own personality onto this person. and you're like, you know, helping other people. But, you know, it's the classic meme of they never ask Shepard how she's doing. You know, they never sit down and give her anything back. But here it was kind of like a reminder of, oh, yeah, like these people are friends. And ultimately, as much as you want them to survive, they're also rooting for you to survive, not just to get the job done, but to come back, be their friends, and continue having these parties. I thought that was a cool little detail, like humanized Shepard in a way that I just had never thought about before.
The one character I got that from was Liara. Liara is leagues above anything. She's never been bad, but I think not having her in two, basically, and then being brought back in like such a major way was like such a nice way to cap it off, where, especially for my Shepherd, we were together in the first one, and then I kind of like, we got separated because, you know, I died, so then I went off with Miranda for that one. And then like they just, I do have problems with like just some characters, like Miranda is just like gone, and Thane, whatever, I won't say what goes on with him, but like how the UI is trash, and that you get an email, right? And now I fall into this thing. I got an email from Thane. It's like, I'll go there in a minute. But it doesn't order it in when you get the emails, just throws them into whatever goddamn order they want. And then I was like, wait a minute, didn't I have one from, and I managed to find the Miranda stuff, but by the time I got to the Thane stuff, it's too late. And luckily, thanks to the Citadel DLC, bring it back to the Citadel DLC, you get some videos from, you see, for Thane or his son.
TV.
And I was like, thank God I got that, because poor Thane just, you know, was doing a thing. And if you miss that time,
there's not really any going back.
And then like that changes how like a very minor character ends up later on as well. And I mean, I didn't really care for that thing, but it was more like that would have been a nice way to bring it back. But no, it was held back by some text that never creates a side mission, because all side missions and missions are now in one lump, and then all the emails are just in a random order, and I just hated it so much.
I think that's more than fair. And one thing I was going to ask as well, because I'm still going through Mass Effect 2, I'm still combing every part of that game, but one of the biggest criticisms of 3 is obviously how much the multicolored endings ended up dominating the overall conversation on the trilogy, just with a lot of people just saying, you know, nothing mattered, because all of it was just going to, you know, funnel back into this multicolored ending thing. And what do you guys think of that now? Because I think there's a completely different perspective on Mass Effect 3 and on the trilogy itself. And BioWare do bring more things across all three games than you think. Like, there are those roadblocks or those sort of siphoning off parts where it's like, okay, we're not going to have Liara fundamentally in 2 unless you do the DLC stuff. And then we're going to fundamentally take Miranda out of 2. So they are sort of chopping and changing main characters. But do you think there is like a confident sort of through line across all three games that is even more obvious if you play them in the Legendary Edition? Segmented AF?
I don't think it feels segmented. I'm yet to get to the final mission, like I say, so I will reserve my comments on that and not resort to my 11-year-old takes or however long that was ago. Maybe 9 years, I can't remember.
Disgusting.
Generally, you know, we were talking this morning about how difficult it is to carry over major decisions across multiple games, because there's so many variables that the writers have to account for, so much manpower that goes into creating the specific scenes in terms of cinematics, in terms of mechanics, in terms of different gameplay stuff. And I feel like 3 strips a lot of your choices away. You know, there's the basic thing of only having mostly 2 responses to everything. Shepard talks a lot when you don't have any input at all. In the narrative itself is railroaded way more than it is in 1 and 2. At the same time, though, I still think it does complement a lot of the decisions you made previously. Yes, sometimes that does end up in just resulting in a JPEG in your war assets, but other times it results in cool little stories that you might not have gotten otherwise. You know, there's a really cool resolution to one minor character that you meet in Mass Effect 1 that can like end quite horrifically if you choose the Paragon route in the first game, which I thought was really cool. Mm-hmm. So I can see why they had to take a lot of that choice away from you. And ultimately, for me, the storytelling in 3, for the most part, until you get to the end, is solid. Like the things that they do with most of the characters, the way that all of the major beats play out in terms of, you know, forging these alliances, you know, wrapping up these plot arcs that were established in 1 and 2. For me, they mostly hit, and I feel like it could have gone so terribly wrong in the other direction that I don't mind if a little bit of control has to be taken away from me to deliver those moments and make sure that the vast majority of players, even though your decisions influence them somewhat, get something satisfying, get something that they can tie to their Shepherd.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was the kind of the thing with in two, like you'll find tons of like radio reports, little news bulletins and stuff that reference even the most minuscule side missions in Mass Effect 1. And just for me, combing every part of two, not that, I mean, two is the one I've been through the most, but I've never really like combed it, like minuscule every corner of this world. I'm going to do everything in it, and realizing how much they sort of bring across from one into two. Yeah, Benroy, how have you found, like, because you went through all three of them, I think, in a row or pretty tightly anyway. Yeah. How congruous did that whole trilogy feel?
I just became Mass Effect, and it's by the end of it, and I did so much two. I played so much of two and three. I can see why people might. I mean, I've never seen the true ending, so I don't know how garbage it is. But I take that game as it's not that final mission isn't the ending, right? There's so much that is ending in that game, whether it's the Genophage stuff or the
Quarian stuff.
Yeah, the Quarian between them and the Geth and other character storylines where you've heard about them speaking about something and now it's coming to resolution. And even like the Elusive Man stuff, I thought was done really well. And there's just some people I feel that were left behind. But at the end of the day, I hate that saying as well. You get to a point where they're either going to waste so much time in making things that most players will never see, or I think it's fine. Like the three choices I got, I mean, there's another secret fourth one as well and stuff like that. But the resolutions were like, say, I loved the ending of the Genophage stuff. I loved all the Quarian and the Geth stuff. And I loved that they felt like two massive endings within this game, and sort of like discovering things with Liara and Javik at certain points. And then, going back to Earth and like finishing the fight, as it were, that was fun. I just wish there was more character stuff there on Earth in London, and not just looking like London does now. But I just, I thought as a package, it brought as much of it back in, even to the point of like, I don't know if Josh was referencing this character, but the fan that you can find in the first one, and then finding that guy in a
Conrad
certain
Werner?
Yeah, Conrad, yeah. And finding him, and oh, little lad man. And then he gives you, I mean, spoilers, he gives you one towards the galactic help with his dissertation.
I guess that's all he's got, really.
He pulls up a dissertation, like, I have a dissertation, and he's like, one, and like, oh, for good. Thanks, mate. Thanks for your one help. But it's just fun like that. And even like some of the stuff in that.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
In the DLC with the grim ending with the guy with the pipes in his mouth and stuff, you get a character from that who comes back, Overlord, sorry. He's in this at some point, and he's in a little side bit with another person. You're like, oh yeah. And like just little bits like that are all going back in, and the Omega stuff, if it's in this game and you didn't play it as DLC, that fits in nicely as well. It's just I think for the most part, they do as best as they could when it's not all siphoned off into DLC.
That's the ultimate takeaway, I think, is that if you just take EA out of it, just all those weird publishing decisions. The assumption is that it was all EA. I'm pretty sure it all was. I'm pretty sure Jason Schreier covered this in one of his books and stuff. But it very much felt like EA sticking their tendrils in and going, oh, Yavik's important. Oh, this is important. Let's cut all that stuff out. Like, all the Leviathan stuff is pretty fundamental to understanding what's even happening in the end. Otherwise, you don't really have that much of a concept of what's happening with the Star Child and everything. Let's bring it back to Shepard, because one of the criticisms at the time was that they wrote a character for Shepard, and a lot of people at the time were really annoyed that, you know, say for example, the go-to example is if you played Shepard as a complete a-hole renegade, doesn't care, insulting, throwing mercs out of windows left, right and center, then why would that person then care that one child got killed at the start of Mass Effect 3? And the more that they have those dream sequences and nightmare sequences, the more a lot of people who couldn't get with that in the opening scene only grew to hate how much they tried to railroad Shepard into a main character. Plus, on the marketing side, EA were out there saying, you know, Mass Effect 3 is the perfect place to start. Everybody should jump in here and, you know, hey, look, there's the multiplayer. There's all this kind of thing. There's all the ways to experience Mass Effect. Do you think what's your thoughts on the way they've written, the way Shepard gets written in 3 versus how open they can be in 1 and 2 and that whole idea of jumping in 3?
I have 2 points to bring up here. First is directly addressing the criticism that apparently like the writing is incongruous with Renegade Shep in previous games. I don't think that's true. You know, yeah, they might be having this kind of like nightmare about this one child, but it's not just the one child. The one child reflects the entirety of Earth being under Reaper threat. You know, like even in those nightmares, you're chasing the one kid, but as you go through the nightmares, they're more populated by these shadows of people like you've lost and stuff. So I feel like even the most heartless renegade shepherds, like they were never outright evil. Like BioWare made a huge point of being like, if you go down this path, you're not an evil dude. You're the renegade, you know, you're doing things that are, you know, unempathetic and stuff, but you're not outright evil. And I feel like even with that in mind, the destruction of Earth, the thing that you've been trying to warn people and they've not been listening about finally happening in front of your eyes, that would, even on a renegade ship, max renegade ship, leave some kind of impact where the story kind of works. That said, I do kind of think it's disappointing that you lose so much control over Shepard to get that. You know, like I mentioned before, the lack of options and dialogue, the fact that Shepard now just says things, and even if you do have an option between two different things, they're basically the same thing, and the tone barely even changes. Like you say some Paragon stuff in here that comes out as a renegade response would in the previous games, and that is disappointing. However, there is a silver lining to this, I think, in that Shepard, like I mentioned in the Citadel DLC discussion, feels a bit more human, feels a bit more tighter written, and feels more like a person this time around, which I think,
not just like
the Space Marine, which was good for 1 and 2. You know, I still really love that. But, you know, like Roy was saying at the start of this podcast, this game is about, you know, endings, but it's about like the apocalypse, you know, like the worst thing that's happening. And it's really trying to drive home the fact that everything is terrible. This is the darkest moment in the galaxy's history. And to get a Shepard that feels more connected to that emotionally, I do think ultimately works a bit more, because I don't know whether it's just like for me playing as FemShep, like Jennifer Hale is putting in like such a great performance in this.
Yeah, she's stellar.
She was always good, but this does feel like a proper step up, and there's way more emotion, there's way more nuance to how she's delivering the lines than that. And for me, that works in creating a Shepard that I can connect to a little bit more. It might not be my Shepard so much, but at the same time, it is an interesting trade-off that to lose that control, you get this Shepard that, for me, works a bit more on an emotional level, works a bit more on a dramatic level, and feels more like a person than just this, like you said, this space marine that is kind of like the hero and following the hero's journey. So it's weird, because I don't necessarily think one is better than the other. I probably do like the more open Shepard of Mass Effect 1 and 2, but at the same time, I can still appreciate this for what they're going for, and I don't think it's a total misfire like some of the choices I do think just completely missed the mark.
That was Benroy, did you find that? Like, because I think one of the things that fueled the hate for Mass Effect 3, it was everything around, it was like everything I described before, the marketing side of it, how much EA were getting all money hungry about it and everything else. But like, if we'd played those three games back to back as opposed to across a 5-year period, then maybe, like, I mean, how did you find the writing in 3, the writing of Shepard or the character of Shepard versus 1 and 2?
I think I played like, not to be like, I did this. I think I played their ideal shepherd, where I was basically like, I'm a nice Jedi Paragon person, and I'm going to try and save as many people as I can and stop people fighting. No, I'm not going to secretly ruin the Genophage and make it even worse, you little idiots. Of course I'm going to save the... Of course I'm going to save the Krogan, you... I can't say any real words on the... Yeah, and, like, going through this, like... bringing back everyone into the fold. And, you know, if you want to be a renegade and you hate the kid and stuff, just imagine Shepard was trying to knock him out. That's why he just looks so sad as he's running. I want to kick the crap out of you.
That would work really well.
And when he was in the vent, he's like, yeah, I'll just come here, you. Because you run out of ammo at that point, and you've got, they're specifically like, melee some things in this game, even though you don't really need to.
In nine years, no one's justified those scenes in a better way. That's really, yeah,
you just wanted to beat him up, the little, come here. But it's time to come in for dinner. Your beans are getting cold. But like the rest of it, I feel like my shepherd, I feel like, because two is one of the best things you can ever get, right? Because it's BioWare doing what they kind of, whatever they want, because one is the setting point where it's like the nucleus for it all, and then two is just do what you want, just go out there and do what you want,
it's,
and
like,
have
everything
going out there, and then it's all got to come back in, because you can't have 74 different endings. I mean, you could if it's like a text adventure or something like that, but at the same time, you want to be able to, if you ever go anywhere, and when we forget Andromeda even exists, and have the next,
I don't know where they go from here, that's a whole separate thing,
but yeah, like when that comes in there, at least there's sort of like three binary endings at the end of it, and I wonder if they will let you go for you. They're gonna have to pick one of them, because some of them have such repercussions. You're just like, well, that this is very different things. And at the end of the day, like, what if say some people decided, nah, the Geth are all going to die at some point, like earlier on in the game, or now all the Krogan are going to die. Like, how do they bring that stuff back in as well towards the end? But I think for the most part, in playing it in 1 week and living it, and just skipping meals for this game and stuff, I'm like, you know what? It's a bank holiday weekend. What if I just played Mass Effect 2 for 12 hours?
How much wine did you consume across this trilogy?
The wine is only consumed after 6 o'clock on days off as well, when it gets darker, but a lot, yes. I mean, like, especially when you get to the end, you know, Keeves getting ready for like the final battle, and you need to get there and help him. Like, I just imagine him, like, you've anyone seen like the Godzilla movies, just like Kong and Godzilla, he's just there just punching a reaper on his
in
own
slow motion,
like, yeah, just sort of like, no, but yeah. And as he's trying to beat up that little kid as well, because he hates the little kid as well.
Everyone wants the kid.
That's why the universe is being destroyed, because this little idiot.
It's funny now, because it's 9 years since that big thing. And I wasn't speaking from personal experience in terms of playing as a rogue renegade shepherd. I didn't do that. I was very much playing as myself, Paragon style. But I got, like, that was one of the biggest talking points at the time.
I can understand why people get irate about these things, but for a lot of part, even when I can play a character and do some choices, I try to almost role play, and I have gone on record before saying I don't really like choices in games that much, where it diverts too much, because at the end of the day, for the 400th time, someone's going to be upset, because at one point they've got to bring it in, or is at that point you'll be making two or three different games from then on until the end of time.
It feels like the whole and your choices matter thing was like a mid-2000s zeitgeist that sort of, I don't know, Last of Us kind of upended it with Joel
repay making his own choice, and don't trade this game in, do it again sort of thing.
Yeah, and I think there's pros and cons to it. One thing we should quickly touch on is the way that they've changed the galactic readiness stuff, because that doesn't have anything to do with multiplayer anymore, because multiplayer doesn't exist. So how does that side of the story, the narrative, I guess, even the gameplay feel? Because a lot of the missions to get the galactic readiness thing up in the original version were still aped from multiplayer. It was like, go to this place, defend this thing behind you, five waves of goons are going to come in. And it's all to get these stats up, or you could play the multiplayer. But now I think they just give you points based on individual completion of like specific missions now that were DLC.
Yeah, you just get more points for the missions anyway. Like, you always got some war assets from single player, but it was always encouraging you to go out and play the multiplayer. Like you said, now you just get way more, to the point where I wasn't even like worried about it this time around. Like, if you do a bit of planet scanning, if you do the side missions, if you do the DLC, like, you'll probably get enough for like the best of the best ending. Like, I was surprised at how quickly they started to come once the main missions were proper dropping. But yeah, it's kind of like, it's it's almost like a weird afterthought now, where you can go to your galactic readiness table and look at all the assets you've got. And there's some cool flavor text in there, but it was always a weird part of it, and now it's a super weird part of it. Especially like Roy has said, it's like such a bugbear of mine that you can get like, you know, bring back people like Grunt. And then he's messaging you saying, oh, you should come see me on the ship. And I'm looking for him on the ship. And then I have to go onto Google and be like, where's Grunt? And they say, oh, he's just a war asset. You can't actually talk to him. I'm like, that sucks. That's not great. And I do think the war assets, in a way, gave them like a bit of a cop-out for big decisions that you made. Like the Rachni, for instance, you know, that they just become war assets. And that's quite cool.
They're because, well, like, good at making things.
Yeah, they're well good at making things. Did you know this?
They've been there before.
Talk telepathically, and it's a cool way to, you know, incorporate them. But at the same time, I can see how you'd be disappointed if you're waiting for Mass Effect 1, wondering how they're going to play into it. And it's like, oh, they're just some numbers, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, that whole, like, it always felt like the Galactic Readiness thing was just on there as a way to try and bridge single to multiplayer. And it felt, it's been a while since I played Mass Effect 3 multiplayer, but it had microtransactions, right? Like, it had a whole monetization aspect of it. I'm pretty sure that's why pushing people in that direction. I'm so glad that they cut it out. They're sort of talking about potentially bringing it back. But it feels like a better decision if you're going to keep that. I mean, you have to keep that, like, in terms of the UI, in terms of the way that it rolls out, but connecting it to the DLC missions feels like a good way to go, and encourages you to play everything.
As someone who never dealt with all that stuff before, I didn't mind the Galactic Readiness. I kind of like liked it in a way, like I liked seeing a visual representation of where I was. The only thing I would have said, like with the Citadel DLC, have those people specifically in the ship, or maybe say like, after you've done that one mission with Jack, where is Jack? You can go to that part of the galaxy where Jack is with her kids, or, you know, is Grunt going to be the war room? Like, you know, when you do certain missions and you've got the war room is populated by different people and characters throughout this sort of game, have another area for them to be there, like have another galactic station near off Mars or something like that, you know, just so you can physically interact with them, even if it's like, say, as little as it is with Zaid. And like, he goes, that's my helmet I got from Zangon 7. And I wonder if you didn't get the DLC for 2, does Zaid and other
Kasumi.
Thief, Kasumi, can you even get them in 3? Does Zaid go, who the hell are you?
I mean, I guess he's still like a hired merc, and so kind of Kasumi's like doing a favor for you. But I've never played. I don't know. That kind of broke my mind. I'd imagine that they wouldn't show up. I guess they'd be like, you're missing out on a JPEG from the readiness.
You can't miss Zaid as well in 2, because if you load up, he's in Omega. You have to go through that game to get him.
Yeah, I guess it depends when you installed the DLC, if it was the original.
When in Legendary, is there like, because that threw me off as well, because I was like, wait a minute, I've just got another character already when I'm trying to get a character who reveals to be someone else. I won't spoil 2, even though we did before. And I was like, and then my friend was like, oh no, it's just DLC, just don't bother taking them out because you don't really use them.
It's a strange thing, because back in the day, that was like a return to Omega to find Zaid, as opposed to like, oh, they're the first thing you see on the way to the actual main character. Speaking of characters, though, to round things out, 2 words, James Vega. How well has James Vega aged? Because at the time, it wasn't very good.
He's like useless in the actual game, but so good in the DLC. Like Citadel, especially, like they draw attention to how useless he is, how no one picks him. And I forgot it was Freddie Prinze Jr. who voices him. And he does a pretty good job. Like he's more likable than I remember. But in terms of the sliding scale of male supporting heroes, for me, it's definitely Cade at the top, Jacob at second, and then Vega at the bottom.
It's a low bar, to be fair.
It's just, it would have been hard for anyone coming into this cast in the 3rd game, man, especially when you want those squad slots to be populated by returning friends, and they're like, no, he's James Vega.
Well, that was the thing. He was part of that whole like kind of meat-headed bro. Like everyone can play the multiplayer. Look at this big gym bro we've got as part of the squad. Like, come on, guys, we're going to tackle Gears of War. We're going to take on Call of Duty. Like, it's big action-focused Mass Effect, and it's just everyone just sort of turned on him. But even though he is quite charming. Freddie Prinze Jr. obviously an accomplished voice actor and everything. Ben Roy, thoughts on the old Vega?
The list of characters that you can't take with your missions and you get James Vega. Soon as the game went, nah, go back to the ship, I'll call you later. I never used him again.
Right.
I spoke to him a few times. He was all right in the CLWC, I guess. But at the same time, get out of the game. Just go away. Like, there are so many other choices.
Did you do the pull-up competition with him? The exercise?
Well, until thing. I started getting Renegade, because I'm full Paragon, isn't it? So right, leave me alone.
I'm vaguely... Josh, do you remember if you do a pull-up competition with
you
him?
You do both. You do a fight and the pull-up competition, yeah.
But the vaguest memories.
I'm sorry, just crap. Like the...
You felt
imagine playing that game and having James Vega instead of Xavik and be like, well, there you go.
That's the epitome of the feeling that everyone had in 2012. Was like, what are you doing? Like, we've spent years building to this. But it's so good to know that you can get around that stuff now that they have allowed for that the Legendary Edition is just easily so much better.
And I know we're running long, but one last thing, like, use Rex in the Citadel DLC. He's such a laugh. And it's so fun to have just Rex back and be Rex, even more Rex than usual. He's more chilled out now and stuff like that. And it's just, it's a great, imagine having Rex in this. I know he's got his planet to look after, but imagine having Rex.
You got to save him. You've got to save him at the beginning. Otherwise, none of that other stuff can happen. You can't headbutt that person, I don't think, when you go with the...
Yeah.
Tachanka, but ultimate point being that Mass Effect 3 is a hell of a lot better in 2021 it was always better with its DLC, but with everything baked in and all the other improvements, this is still arguably the finest sci-fi trilogy.
Bad trophy list, but ever. You know.
Well, there is that. There is the wider sci-fi, the wider trophy list of trying to go through it about five times to get everything. But for now, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Ben Roy Turner.
Were it so easy.
And Josh Brown.
Scott Tilford.
Shepherd. No. Goodbye.
Thank you, mate. I am Shepherd. I am.
It's the Shepherd within.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.